to take from what's there and present it elsewhere. I say secondary skill, that doesn't mean it's an abandoned skill. It must be worked at. It must be developed. But it's not necessarily going to develop in the teaching situation. Teaching requires a different kind of focus, and therefore the idea of teaching in Arabic, I think it will leave the student crippled in a very important area when he needs to convey to his own country. But remember, that's my point of view. It's my point of view, and that's why I've done. If I find that someone else has done it differently and achieves better results, I'll by all means migrate to the other model. It is an opinion. Much of what we have done, much of what I've spoken about here, I still regard it as work in progress, as an experiment still running. Wallahu alam.
Jazakumullah.
Sheikh. Qawaid Fiqhiyya, at the moment, the only thing that we are doing is Ajba' al-Nadair of Suyuti. And I'll have to say that we kept the Ajba' al-Nadair of Suyuti till very late, right up to the final year. And this year we had some reconsideration around it. There are other books on the subject as well. And in fact, there's a very nice one by Wahab Zuhaili's younger brother, Muhammad Zuhaili. He's got Qawaid Fiqhiyya according to the Hanafis and the Shafi'is. And I think it makes for a good read for a student living in society, South Africa, where we are fine both, where you can actually have an appreciation of both. But he doesn't do them comparatively. He does this in a separate bab and that in a separate bab. So we've looked at that too. We are stuck with Suyuti for now, because Suyuti has certain fawa'id, I believe. You would have noticed that there's quite a lot of contemporary works, and they had to be balanced against classical works as well. So too much of contemporary will leave the student without any kind of roots in the legacy. So that's one of the reasons for retaining Suyuti for now. But, you know, Suyuti, Suyuti, عِنْدَهُ مِنَ الْإِطْنَابِ مَا لَيْسَ عِنْدَ غَيْرِهِ ثُمَّ عِنْدَهُ مِنَ الْفَوَائِدِ مَا لَيْسَ عِنْدَ غَيْرِهِ. The idea right now, there's some thinking around it, and the idea is that he has different abwab to do some of those abwab over a number of different years. For example, just do the Qawaid Khamsa. Maybe in the third or fourth year, and then bring in some of the other qawaid where the tarjih differs in another year thereafter, because we feel we're experiencing that, first of all, doing the entire book in the final year, don't quite get there, and then doing it along while they're reading fiqh elsewhere, it might just bring that specific required the effectiveness or the relevance of it. Again, we are open to suggestions. If anyone has a system that works better, by all means. Some of the Mutaakhirin's books, there's a Nazm of Suyuti's, what was it, by Ahdal, I think. One of the Ahdals wrote a Nazm of it, and then there's a Sharh on that, and then Sheikh Yasin Fadani wrote a Hashi on that particular, Al Fawaid al Janiyya, I think it's called. Al Fawaid al Janiyya. I feel, however, that the system of Nazm today, to our students, as a pedagogical tool, it worked well in a society once upon a time. I don't think it would work all that well today, with all due apologies to the Qurra. They still stick with the Shatibiyya, and it works like a bomb. So, I don't know. Is there another method aside from the Shatibiyya? Does anyone use a different one? Kullu ma'ya Shatibiyya. Most certainly it would. What happens in our case, the initial focus is that the student needs to understand his madhab well enough, furu'an. And then he needs to understand the other madhab, usulan. Thereafter, some students, the ones that show the necessary acumen, they are sometimes kept behind for a year or two and so on, sometimes given a book or two to teach, but at the same time they will engage in further studies where they will go into deeper things of comparison, not part of the formal course as such, but for those that show the necessary acumen, that have the necessary foundations, and they have the skills required, they will be taken into higher levels. The same goes for some other subjects as well. Over the December holiday, I sat with some of the graduate students and we were reading Sharh al-Tirmidhi, Ibn Rajab, which I found to be an extremely I enjoyed reading that particular work. it allows for access to the field of Ulum al-Hadith in a way that most many of the other books do not allow for it. And it allowed me to explore themes which I have had embryonically lying in my mind, to play out those themes in discussions with those students. If one has been around, read some of the Orientalists, a bit of Schacht, a bit of Joan Ball and all of these people, you start seeing where the mistakes were made by them. You know, for example, if you look at this, Joan Ball or Schacht, all of these people, they have a certain critical methodology in their mind. They will apply it to a certain legacy, to a certain literature. The literature to which they applied it came to be the Sihah Sitta, Bukhari and Muslim at the head of them all. And, you know, that Sihah Sitta, if one looks at its emergence, the catchment area of the Sihah Sitta was a wide one. From there, Bukhari collected these 8,000 other hadith, others collected, and they applied a certain criterion already. So from that area, they got the best of what there is. Going into that area and looking, you know, for loopholes, looking for or applying the criticism which they had, much of which is valid criticism, but applied to the wrong area. It's like going into a health club and looking for sick people. You go into a place where everyone is well, where everyone is healthy, and you're looking for sick people. You don't find sick people, and you see a guy, maybe his eyes are too big, so you say, okay, perhaps, you know, you've got a fever. He doesn't have that. They were applying a good methodology to the wrong field. Had they applied that very same methodology to the Mawdu'at works, it works perfectly. The kind of things where a person would invent certain ahadith for particular psychological reasons, they put it a hadith in Bukhari. Take that same idea and apply it to something which Ibn al-Jawzi has or Ibn al-Raq has or someone like that. It works perfectly. So, what was I saying? Sharh Ilal of Tirmidhi of Ibn Rajab, reading through that, not just the section where he's making sharh of Tirmidhi's words, but afterwards in a section where he gives his own qawaid, it proved to me to be a very, very fertile area to explore certain ideas which I have had for a long time. So the point of saying this was that, yes, some students are kept for further studies, and that's when we go into deeper levels. The run-of-the-mill student who completes, he is given what we've discussed up to now, and there would be certain things thereafter. To do fiqh al-muqaran in detail, I think that is Amrul La Yunal. For someone, for example, say, you know, we're going to read Zuhayli's Fiqh al-Islam wa Adillatuhu, or even more ambitious than that, we're going to do the Mawsu'a Fiqhiyya. No, those are sources, those are references which you need to be familiarized with so that you know where to go to when you need to go there. But encyclopedias, by their very nature, are not textbooks, they're references. So, Fiqh al-Muqaran at the level of Usul, yes, at the level of furu', postgraduate to some. Allahu a'lam. Yes, Mona. A bit louder, ma. You'll have to define tradition now. وَهَذَا حِينَ حَمِيَ الْوَطِيسِ.
In particular, regarding hadath, maulud, and ratib.
You got a problem with hadat. About ratib, I won't say anything. Because it has no place. It has no place. It is foreign. It's a foreign element to Islam. The Hindus do it better than us anyway. So it's no proof of Iman. It is istidraj. These things are istidraj. When you come to the other one though, Haddad is basically a wird. It's a ratib of Imam Abdullah ibn Alawi al-Haddad, which he put together. It's some adhkar. Some of them ma'thur, some of them not ma'thur, some ayat from the Quran, and that is what Haddad is all about. It is also the wird, it is that litany that sustained Muslims in these parts, you know, in the darkest days. It is the expression, it is the one vestige of tasawwuf which remained with people long after they had forgotten what tasawwuf is and what the silsila is and what bay'ah is. It remained with them and it allowed for that particular element in Islam to sustain them, which Allah Ta'ala says, wa dhikrullahi akbar. So now comes the issue of people having it in particular times, having it in particular form. The ratib will remain the ratib. You find the ratib of Haddad, you find the ratib of Attas, you find the ratib of so many, you find the Hizb of Nawawi for that matter. So it's just a weird, it's a collection of adhkar that have been put together. In that particular sense, nothing wrong can be said about it. If people start adding certain accretions to it, certain additions to it and certain things, then what needs to be condemned and abandoned are the things which are added to it. I'm not speaking about the food. The food must be part of it. So. And what is the other one?
The Mawlud.
The Mawlud Nabawi. Right. Mas'ala thara fiha al-khilaf. I have found no single Shafi'i faqih that condemns the Mawlid. I have found some Shafi'i fuqaha who condemn elements associated with the Mawlid while affirming the validity of the Mawlid. Taking it back to Imam Shafi'i's own words, al-muhdathatu ala darbayn. Innovations, to call it innovations, there are two kinds of them. That which is in line with what Sharia says and that which is not in line with what Sharia says. So that is now essentially your bid'ah hasan, your bid'ah sayyah. It forms part of the usul framework of what the Shafi'i madhab is all about, which is why I haven't found a single Shafi'i faqih to condemn the Mawlid as such. The Mawlid was, they admit the fact that the Mawlid is a bid'ah. That cannot be denied. But they say, well, it's a bid'ah hasana. What makes it hasana, what makes it sayyah, depends what you put into the Mawlid. If you put aqaid kufriya into the Mawlid, it becomes a bid'ah sayyah. If you keep it free from that and you keep it as it was in the time of Imam Nawawi's Ustad Abu Shama, he's the first one. He wrote the book against bid'ah. Al-Ba'ith ala inkari al-bid'ah wal-hawadith. And he takes his methodology from Izzuddin ibn Abd al-Salam, his teacher, who laid out that al-bid'ah ala khamsati aqsam. You get the bid'ah wajiba, you get the bid'ah manduba, you get the bid'ah mubaha, and makruha, and muharrama. All four, five of these you do get. And then he says, وَمِنْ أَحْسَنِ مَبْتُدِعَ فِي زَمَانِنَا الْمَوْلِدِ النَّبَوِي. He says it's a bid'ah hasana. So, if we're looking at this from the point of view of the Shafi'i madhab, this is what how the Shafi'i fuqaha have treated it. Many of them have written mawalid themselves. Ibn Hajar has a famous answer that he gave. Suyuti quotes it. Suyuti has a risala on it. What does he call it? Husn al-maqsid fi amal al-mawlid. Sakhawi has written a mawlid. Ibn Kathir has written a mawlid. But in back then, all of them, Ibn Nasir al-Din and so on, what was a mawlid to them? A mawlid was an occasion to celebrate the seerah and to discuss the seerah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Last year, the year before, I bought the mawlid of Ibn Nasir al-Din. Now, Ibn Nasir al-Din al-Dimashqi is also the man who wrote that other book, Ar-Radd al-Wafir ala man za'ama anna man qala fi Ibn Taymiyyah Shaykh al-Islam fahuwa kafir. He's defending Ibn Taymiyyah. So, and he writes a mawlid. So his mawlid is called Jami' al-Athar fi mawlidi al-Mukhtar. I want to see what's his mawlid. His mawlid comes in six volumes. So I want to see what's his mawlid. What is it? It's a book on seerah. Not just the birth of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, his birth, his life, his death, his clothing, it's like shama'il, it's seerah, all of that included. So the mawlid was an occasion of reconnecting with the seerah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Similarly would be the mawlid of Sakhawi, the mawlid of Ibn Kathir and so on. But back then, mawlids were written in the form of what? In the form of hadith books, history books. Then later on, mawlid assumed a different form. In the time of Barzanji, in the time of Ibn Daybah, it assumed a different form now. Now mawlids were written in literary form, no longer in the hadith form. Ibn Nasir al-Din would say, you know, Akhraj al-Bukhari an fulan, and he gives the hadith. Or, you know, Akhraj al-Bayhaqi fi al-Dala'il, and he would give the hadith. Later on, the mawlid doesn't sound like that any longer. The mawlid sounds what? Abtadi'u al-imla'a bismi al-dhati al-aliyyah. Father is shaking his head. He probably knows the mawlid by heart. So it assumes a literary form. And in this literary form, this is the mawlid that we have come to know in our societies. That's the mawlid. And that mawlid is then restricted to that particular night of the 12th of Rabi'ul Awwal when it is read. Or to the month of Rabi'ul Awwal, throughout the month of Rabi'ul Awwal when that mawlid is read. The reading of the mawlid, you know, of the events, recollecting the events, what is the harm therein? It's like a jalsa of seerah, having a jalsa speaking about the seerah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But when the events are based upon mawdu' ahadi, then we have a bit of a problem with that. And the later mawalid do not actually indicate what their sources are. There's a second thing, and that is the qiyam inda dhikri al-mawlid. وَلَمَّا تَمَّ مِنْ حَمْلِهِ عَلَى الرَّاجِحِ تِسْعَةُ أَشْهُرٍ قَمَرِيَّةٍ إِذَنْ فَوَلَدَتْهُ أُمُّهُ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ قَمَرًا يَتَلَأْلَأُ سَنَا. This man's face is shining. He knows all about it. And at that moment, everyone gets up and صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَى مُحَمَّدْ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ. That qiyam is a mas'ala fiqhiyya. Qiyam is a mas'ala fiqhiyya. وَمَسْأَلَةٌ اِخْتَلَفَ فِيهَا فُقَهَاءُ الْمَذْهَبِ الشَّافِعِي. The Shafi'i fuqaha, Ibn Hajar Haytami in his fatawa hadithiyya, treats that particular mas'ala and he calls it a bid'ah shani'a munkara. He says, that's not a bid'ah hasana. That qiyam inda dhikr al-mawlid, bid'ah shani'a munkara. He treats it where he comes, you know, he's asked the question, there's a hadith which says when, which surah was it? Ata amrullahi fala tasta'jilu. When it was revealed to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, then he stood up. So someone asked, if we read today Ata Amrullah, can we also stand up, you know, for the sake of ta'asri bin Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? So he says, no, you cannot. Because Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam stood up there when it said, when the ayah came to Ata Amrullah. So he thinks Qiyamah has come now. فَلَا تَسْتَعْجِلُوا. He sits down again. So the madi is for not for tahqiq, but for ta'keed. Ata amru Allah, not it has come, it will most certainly come. So he sits down again. So the sabab for the qiyam existed for a very short space of time and then it's gone. So he sat down. So from there it goes on and says, the standing at the time of dhikrul mawlid, this is bid'ah shani'a munkara. Some of the mutaakhirin in Hijaz afterwards and in Yemen, they have said that no, it's amr mustahsan. They didn't find it as bad as that. So it's a masala of ikhtilaf between the ulama. Personally, I'm much more inclined to the view of Ibn Hajar. Well, if the qawaid of iftah in the madhab are to be considered like we laid it out previously, then the view of those mutaakhirin doesn't really hold water against his view. But there are some fuqaha who have said so. And then they will quote certain things. They will quote the incident of Yamsuki rahmatullahi alayhi, when Ibn Sasri's qasida was recited in front of him. قَلِيلٌ لِحَظِّ الْمُصْطَفَى الْخَطُّ بِالذَّهَبِ وَأَيَّنْهَضَ. No. قليل لحظ المصطفى الخط بالذهب على ورق من خط أحسن من كتب وأن ينهض الأشراف عند سماعه. And Subki stood up and everyone else stood up. فحصل أنس كبير. Everyone felt very good. So they say, well, Subki stood up so we can also stand up. That was waqi'at hal, one particular incident. And we don't say Subki sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, we say Subki rahimahullah, he's not a Nabi. And he did it under the impulse of the moment. There are times, and you know, when one listens very carefully to the Mawlid of Barzanji being recited, and you know the language, and you're following the recitation, when that moment of the Mawlid is actually mentioned, you can feel a very strong urge to do something. You want to do something. Now, whether you're going to hit a cartwheel, or you're going to laugh or cry, but some people express it in the sense of standing up. Now, if they do it under that particular a force of sentiment at that moment, that would be similar to Subki. But if they're standing up simply because this is the ritual, when once the bid'ah hasana becomes ritualized, then it starts assuming dimensions that are somewhat questionable now. After ritualization, when the bid'ah hasana not ritualized only, but elevated to the level of the wajib, in the sense that, oh, you don't stand up, therefore you hate Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, or you don't make the mawlid, and therefore you disrespectful Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, it's not a wajib. It's a bid'ah. It's tolerable in that sense. But when the bid'ah hasana reaches those proportions, then the very first persons to condemn it would be the very same fuqaha who have approved of it. So they will approve of it within certain limits. And they will disapprove of it when it crosses those lines. They would have disapproved of it. In their time, it didn't quite reach those limits. It was only afterwards. And there, Ibn Hajar could speak about it. He had seen one thing which he condemned. But as for the Mawlid in general, he says it's fine. He's got a book called An-Ni'matul Kubra ala al-Alam bi Mawlidi Sayyidi Waladi Adam. And in there he discusses what the people of Makkah, where he used to live, what they do on the night of Mawlid. And they all go to the place of where Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was born. But then he condemns some of the things which they do, men and women and everyone else. He said that is wrong. So those aspects of the Mawlid which are condemnable will be condemned. The Mawlid itself in essence was not condemned. But فِعْلُهُ وَتَرْكُهُ سَوَى. Those who do it are good. Those who do not do it, there's no blame against them either. I just think that Mawlid in our society sometimes have been taken completely out of context. It has been made a mas'ala of tafsiq and tabdi' and all of these kind of things which shouldn't necessarily be. Those of us who are in control, those of us who have the manabit and the maharib, should make islah of these rusum. Reform these rusum to bring it in line with what the sharia would demand. But this kind of islah will not come about by condemnation. Condemnation only breeds opposition. When you condemn, you don't reform, you just make the opposition more determined to continue with it exactly as is. So if it could be brought in line, if there is something wrong with it, condemn what is wrong, leave the rest. And that's where I speaking in light of what the madhab says, that's where I would leave it.
Am I particular with the khadat been doing on 7 nights and 40 nights in one year?
Oh, there's no basis for that whatsoever. So you can have that, have it on the 9th night or the 2nd night or whenever. Once we start tying down to certain days and then start inventing certain strange things about it as well, that's a kind of islah that I would think. Don't tie it to a particular night. Those are, by all means, have the occasion, but do not tie it to anything. Had there been compelling evidence to show that on that 7th night something specific happens, or on the 40th night something happens, and even the 100 nights, and then the 1 year's passing and so on, if there's specific evidence, then fine. I haven't seen such evidence. If anyone has, they could present it.